missed out on that one. Well, the universe didn't, because I heard it, but...
Yeah, the universe got it.
Universe got it. I got it. But no one else heard it. Basically, before... I thought Mark was recording, but before you joined us, dear listener, Mark told me a joke that was both cosmically and spiritually just instantly enlightening and also so hilarious that I've spent the last 5-10 minutes rolling on the floor laughing. And unfortunately, it wasn't recorded. So, and I guess if you were to tell it the second time round, right, it's not going to have the same... Do you want to try it?
Sure, sure. Is it a joke? I didn't even know it was a joke. I mean, you know...
It's all a joke.
Yeah. Okay, I was just, you said that, like, I was saying that I got this new Ramana Maharshi book I really like.
Some
and I like
people
it,
call me the space cowboy.
And Ramana Maharshi book I normally read.
Some call me the gangster of love.
Print, like, my eyes. And you said, oh, maybe that's.
Some people call me Maurice. Because I speak of the pompous of love. I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry. Cause I'm right here at home. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker. I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker.
It still does take energy, but...
Yeah.
I don't know what's...
And this is the perfect example, right? Because the first time you told it, instant enlightenment, at least on my side, and also just like hilarious, but like the hilariousness of true wisdom. And the second time you told it... It was just words. So
more dry,
there you go.
More dry. Yeah.
No, it. But that
contrived.
Is how that's how things work. That if anything is actually happening in a real fluid way, then it's perfect. And if it's not, if we're thinking it, overthinking it, then it's imperfect, and therefore also a place of suffering.
Yeah, less good, definitely. It's interesting. I mean, sometimes people can seem like they can nail it with like a story or a joke or something and over, but that might be its own kind of thing. This might have been more of an in the flow of conversation thing than an antidote in itself. That is, yeah.
That's right. Yes, it's all about the spirit, all about the spirit, and not necessarily about the content. Because let's remind ourselves, we are just flooded in content in this world.
So much.
Do we need more content? Probably not. Do we really need? Where are we? Episode 57, 58. What are we doing this evening?
Yeah, because it's correlated with chapters, right? I think we're at.
Is it perfection? Destiny of all. It is actually about perfection. There we go.
Look at that. I love the topic of perfection. Let me see here. Okay, I'm going to mark this page.
Is there anything for us to learn as perfect as we are?
Well, yeah. You can still learn stuff. That doesn't make you not perfect.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Are we not showing our imperfection by the fact that we've already done this? Because this looks very familiar. I've even marked it like we've already talked about it.
Okay. Did we? Maybe
nothing is a mistake unless repeated. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, it does. It does indeed. Okay, cool. Okay, 59. Desire and fear.
I think we've done that one. But isn't it brilliant? Because if someone's just joining us now, they've had a full recap of everything that happened in the last, like the last time on Life Answers. We read this,
amazing.
and the whole summation of it was,
wow.
Nothing is a mistake unless repeated, as we have shown by the fact that we're trying to repeat this thing.
Oh wow!
But we're on 59.
I like it. Yeah. Nice, an example of that. That's cool.
All right, shall we? Sorry, apologies for my. I've got a bit of a catch in the throat. Coming down with a bit of a end of winter.
Yes.
Torcicollo, as the
my
Italian
roommate says. Has that as well. I'm hearing during my spiritual studies, I have a cacophony of he's an interesting, very eccentric guy. He really just goes for it with the throat clearing and the I like him a lot, so I've noticed that actually kind of it's part of the isness, and I actually find it to be quite perfect. Speaking of perfect.
Well, that's why we don't need episode 58, because we read it. We were both immediately made perfect in every way, because we are perfect. Oh, actually, you know, funny you should say that. Before we launch into 59, I was thinking about something we talked about last time, because it was the one thing you said in the episode where I almost felt kind of like, I don't know, it kind of like annoyed me almost, right? Mm. And I think it's when people say something that annoys you, that's when you should really, really pay close attention to, I don't know, the ego cage or whatever, right? Because that is showing you that what is this attachment around, right? Or what is, I don't know, maybe there's some hidden gold there. And it was when you were talking, but I think it's connected to this idea of perfect. Because it's like when you were talking about, and it wasn't even your idea. You were, I think, referring to it that somebody, you can maybe remind me, was sort of saying, well, maybe we should just walk around congratulating ourselves all the time. Like super, super like, oh, you're able to open a fridge. Brilliant. Yeah. And there was something, I don't know, super ego. I don't really know what it was. I was kind of almost insulted by this idea. But that's then amazing. Last night, because finally, obviously I'd heard the last episode and finally the perfection pill worked, I actually was walking around very late at night eating an apple, and I suddenly was like, wow, well done you. You have managed to like find this like perfectly temperature controlled environment with food on hand and any entertainment you like and lots of interesting projects. Like, wow, you've just like arrived in the Shangri-La of perfection in, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, I don't actually normally feel that way about my life, but I imagine that if you were to truly be, I don't know, full of gratitude and full of congratulations, maybe it would sometimes look a bit like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is what that's what my experience of, you know, like the higher states, when you get closer to that sort of awakened state, it's like basically, and just yesterday I was like, it's so funny. It's like, I don't know whether it's a mental illness that we have or what exactly is going on, but it's like, yeah, you know, when you're just, I was sitting there in my kitchen and these floors, I have perfectly slatted wooden floors and perfectly temperature controlled environment. And I have a body that has this incredible working system of veins and it's all balanced and I can walk around, I can see stuff. Like I really deeply, it's like too good to be true. Like
you've won the lottery. You've won the jackpot. You know, whatever the jackpot. But that's the thing I would suggest, right? That most of us, including myself, most of the time, I'm walking around with this idea of what actually winning the lottery would look like. And that's because the culture has completely and utterly, because that's what language is. It's a sort of a culture. It's a sort of, you know, and like an inserted culture, logos, chip or something that has told me that no, the thing that our ancestors, you know, our human ancestors that really told them that they'd won the lottery, which was basically you get to the end of the day, you're safe, the people you love are relatively safe, as safe as they can be, you're safe and warm and there's food and a little bit of entertainment. Wow, well done. You should be jubilant. You should be just like congratulating everybody. And somehow in the space of, I don't know, what has it taken? 20,000, probably not even that long, 20,000 years, we have basically convinced ourselves that that's not enough.
Yeah, I think like
that we need more. we actually need more than that.
Yeah, maybe for the progress.
It's a kind of insanity.
Yeah, it is insane. I mean, like, maybe for the progress and evolution, like, there was required to be, like, a more mentality. But then somehow we just, like, got that ingrained in our minds. And as we progressed, so maybe it was a necessary element for the progress. But then once we, you know, but it's not an element that is, it's like, there is no real true anyway, you know, like both things are kind of made up anyway, you know, but like it's not like a functional for, it's kind of insane. So like that insanity that like Native Americans witnessed, and like, why do they, you know, there's a story like they see that the white people come and they just want all the stuff, and they just take all the, and that they already have enough and they still want more, and they're like, why do the white
people want all this? They see greed. They see greed.
It's greed.
Action.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And like, you know, but then like in the state prior to that mentality, that I think the British people were quite good at, but you know, many people before that as well, like you know, but it created this incredible thing in the world. Actually, it actually did something very amazing and worthwhile and very incredible, like very, very cool, like amazing. But like I think that it could be hard to have that without the without that insanity. Yeah. But now I don't want to be insane anymore. It's just not fun. I want Elon Musk to stay insane though, because he's nailing it. But I wouldn't want me, you know, unless you're gonna do some serious, at this point, like some real, real shit. Like, it's just not.
He's doing his some life interesting sucks, things, you know? Elon, isn't he? I think that thing that he's doing. Well, we shouldn't even really talk about it because we're churning these babies out. I was going to talk about the thing he's doing, but of course, by the time this episode comes out, which will probably be in 2 months' time, right? It will.
Yeah.
People will be like, "What? Why are they talking about that thing that happened 2 months ago?" So anyway, let's crack on, shall we?
Okay, let's do it.
Episode
yeah.
59. But before we do that, because this episode is slightly ramshackle in the best possible way, give me just a minute or two to go and turn my vegetables, my harissa marinated veg.
Ooh.
Again, you know, like, wow, I'm like, you know, I mean, this, even 20,000 years ago, this would have been utterly magical.
Unbelievable.
Imagine you tell someone 20,000 years ago that you don't have to go out and forage and hunt and grow things from frickin' seeds for months on end and stop other animals eating them. You could just go out to this place that's like 5 minutes away and just pick up all this amazing stuff and then just chop it up and throw some other stuff on it. And then you eat this like banquet of, I mean, that would be
unbelievable.
Be like, surely you're talking about heaven there. This is heaven, mm-hmm. right? This is paradise.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah, it's true. It's funny. Like, because of our mind disease, we like can never have enough. We just, it never is enough. We have some, we make up a new problem, which is just not enjoyable. It's a recipe for not enjoying your life.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, just give me a minute. What I will do when I mix this is I'll put something in the space that will feel potentially satisfying. I don't know what it is, but I don't know, maybe a little Larry David could be.
Oh, amazing. He has some good stuff last night you could put in there. Yeah.
Just to kind of, I haven't seen it yet, just to kind of like the clearing of the palate, like, you know, like if that was like the first course and then the little, I don't know, something you sip or something.
Yeah, this some ginger.
The palate cleanser. Here we go. Okay.
Amazing.
Or you could even do a chant or something. I mean, it's completely up to you. I don't know.
All right. Maybe both. I'll do a little Jaya Hanumana, and then we can put in a little Larry David. Jaya Hanumana Yana Gunasagara Jaya Kapisa Tihum Loka Ujagara Ramaduta Aluita Baladama Anjani Putra Basana Sutra Nama Mahabira Bikrama Bajaranghi Kumatena Vara Sumateke Sanghi Kankana Varana Varaja Subesa Kanana Kundala Kunjita Kesa Hatha Vajra O Dvaja Varajai kande mumja jeneo sajai. And here's Larry David.
Technology, I was able to obviously hear that. In the kitchen.
That's funny, nice.
And that's just really cool. I was thinking, no, we don't need the Larry David thing because there we go.
Oh, a little Larry, what? Too. A little Larry's, he's so on point. It's just like, oh, I feel like that's, okay.
What? I've never heard that. What is that? What were you singing?
That's the Hanuman Chalisa. Have you ever heard of the Hanuman Chalisa?
Mm-mm.
Ooh, it's good stuff. It's good. It's a beautiful chant. There's like a thing on Spotify, 108 different renditions of it. I really like Trevor Hall's version. And wow. David Newman, actually. I know David Newman. He does a beautiful one. There's a couple from him as well. And it's like, Hanuman was a devotee. He's like the... Archetypical, devotee. That's his thing. It's all about like devotion to Ram in his case. He's all about Ram. Mm. He's kind of like, so some people really resonate. Ram Dass is famous for being extremely into Hanuman and devotion in general. And so that is like the flavor of that is a devotional flavor, which isn't normally my go-to at all. But I find myself when I'm at places like, Maui or Koh Phangan, that's very common. And that one resonates. That one sounds sounds amazing.
It does sound amazing because, as I was listening to it, another thought I had was, okay, here we are. Culturally speaking, in terms of our early religious touchstones, or even ongoing at a maybe identity level, as it often is for a lot of secular Jews, here we are, two Jews, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we're of course and are lots of Boo Jews, Jew Boos. Jews do seem to be very much drawn to these, Friedman, right? I mean, again, he was a he Jew. I'm trying to think of like
I just
a,
love
a
that
Jew or a. Or a
Hinju,
a,
Hinju,
a,
Hinju.
A Hinju. Hinju. A Hinju or yeah. an Advaiju or something like that, right?
Juvita, yeah.
Juvita, yeah, that sounds good. What are you? I'm a bit of a Juvita,
Oof, that's
what I'm into.
Hinju, I think Hinju sounds funny. Yeah, Juvita.
Or a Hinju. Okay, but the thing is, if you want, I guess, some sort of devotional, whatever, there's plenty of that going in the Jew camp. What is
there
it?
Is.
Why is it that you and I are not necessarily, like you? I'm probably more likely to learn that and go around singing that than I am. Is that a failure of Judaism? Is it just that the Hebrew doesn't really carry that? Maybe it's. I don't know, it doesn't carry that gentleness or that openness that we're looking for. It's more guttural. I don't know. What is it?
I think that Jewish chants and almost like the whole, I don't know about the religion, but sort of like the whole, the holidays. I feel like they really do an incredible job of honoring death and honoring culture in like a very deep way. That's very cool, but they don't nail it with their inspiration, I don't think.
And honoring
like
God. Honoring God.
I'm
the only God. Remember, I'm the only God. I'm the monotheistic
That's a little
God.
Intense,
I am your.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the nice stuff. I don't know. I can read Hebrew.
Yeah.
Like a lot of Jews, I could read Hebrew, but.
Oh, I can. That's amazing.
You pick it up at cheder, right? But a lot of the. I don't really speak it. I don't really know what it means. So if I ever go to a synagogue, I am obviously I can kind of follow. But then I go over to the English and I'm like, whoa, like, I don't know, not really in my name, you know, like, I don't really like the content of a lot of it, right? Even though it can be very beautiful, and sometimes I'm hearing those melodies and I'm very, like, emotionally moved. Whereas I don't know anything about the Hanuman gig, but I imagine if I was to go, which I will do, and actually read the words in a language I understand, I suspect I would probably be able to get behind them a little bit.
I mean it's just all like, God is so great, God's awesome, thank you God, like, you know, it's like kind of very
maybe it's not that different to the Jews then, but maybe I have a projection, because it's not my like home base, maybe I have a projection that it is more expansive or more well-meaning than I sometimes see some of that very stentorious monotheistic
good word
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually, I just wanted, the one more thing we could probably finish at the end, but two nights ago my roommate's mother passed away. She was very old, she was 95, and we had a like a Jewish a mix of Zoom and people come. So, like, you know, it was like our house had lots of people here, and then my mom was here as well. And then, like, it was like 50 or 100 people on Zoom as well, and a rabbi. And it was very powerful. Like, her sisters, they all shared. It was very beautiful, like, so beautiful. And, very grounded and very, like, kind of just powerful, very human, though, like, very human, you know, like, and it was just like very beautiful. Then I came back up for spiritual study, and you know, more spiritual study. And like I picked up, I Think I Am That, and I was starting to, and I was like, ooh, that's, I can't. All right, like it's not. It's like it's too positive for that tone. Like this, I just experienced this very deep and moving thing. It's like not. So I did the Mark Nepo instead, which is like not as advanced. It's not quite as like, quote unquote, advanced. It's not as close to enlightenment. It's not like, he's not like a fully realized person, like her for like being as Nisargadatta is, but it's like embracing the human aspects, which is kind of just as good in a way, but it's just not as enlightened. Like it's not like enlightened is necessarily better. It's just like, it's like both are really beautiful. Like it couldn't have been better than that service. That service and like,
well,
connecting with looking,
I mean,
at my,
maybe enlightened,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe again, maybe enlightened, as the name would suggest, I'm just sorry, seeing this very kind of concretely for a moment, is about, you know, the amount of light that is there. So if you've got like 100,000 lux, let's say, shining in to a space, it's so enlightened. I mean, maybe that is what really non-duality is. It's so enlightened that there is nothing but light, and therefore everything is perfect, et cetera, et cetera. But sometimes, particularly if someone has died, actually you don't want that space. Actually, you want it pretty dark. You want, you know, I mean, what's that Leonard Cohen line, you know? I'll have to play that at the end. It's like, you know, it's like, there's a song where he basically extols the virtues of darkness, but not as in a kind of woe is me way, but just kind of like there is a place for the dark. And I think there is a place for woe, dark, tearing of, as we know, tearing of clothes, a covering of mirrors, those kinds of rituals. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, George, you know, is like just the human thing, like just like the touchingness of the, you know, human stuff that this type of thing is really not interested in, because they just, because that does get in the way of enlightenment a little bit. But that's why I'm a little like, I don't know if I need to be,
well, it
like
keeps
it, you
dark.
Know,
it keeps it dark. Yeah. I mean,
right.
But
dark,
for
right.
that, it needs to be. It kind of needs to be dark. I don't know. And I would like to think that even an enlightened being, let's say like Nisargadatta, I would like to think that actually someone who has had some kind of attachment, some kind of relationship with in his life, I would like to think that doesn't preclude him from, I don't know, experiencing all the emotions that he felt yesterday, right?
I don't think
the enlightenment kind of like, I don't think it gets you out of that experience.
I think it does a little.
It's more just how you frame it. Oh, really?
Okay. I think, yeah, definitely.
I'd like to think a little bit.
Not necessarily. I mean, maybe he could just sort of really allow himself to. I think it really changes the way it occurs, though. Like, it's sort of like, because you're so clear that it is a play and you are not your body. So there's no, like, you can really, it's kind of like you can really try to pretend something. You know, if we want to pretend that we're marshmallows and we live in like a candy land, like, we can do that right now. And we can be like, we are marshmallows, we live in a candy land. But we can only believe that as much as we can. Like, he knows he isn't a human being. Like, it's not like he isn't a human being. We're not human beings. We're not. I mean, we're just not. So, like, but this whole play going on is very beautiful and amazing. I think we're doing it for a reason. But once you're really clear, like, I've been at stages
but
where
we
I've
are
been
human
super
beings
clear
in the language, and, in the sense of in the language realm. Right. In the language realm, we can't help but be human because that is how our human, even if we're talking about these very transcendent things, we can't help but be human in talking about those things because I would say that that's where we exist in the language realm. But,
true.
I mean, that's where, you know, you can't really express this stuff in language. But hey, we're trying. But before, let's jump into.
okay, let's do
it. I can smell that veg kind of going.
Oh, yes.
We do that. I am going to try. I've never done this before in my life. No, I'm not even going to try it. I was going to say I'm going to try to do like my like a Larry David impression because while you were talking, I thought what Larry would kind of say with regard to all of this stuff about like the Jews and the Hindus and the Hindus and all of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And this would be like the Larry David summary. I'm not going to do – I can't really do his
voice. Oh, shame. Okay.
I could maybe go for the intonation. Be like, and channeling Larry. I feel like he would go, well, you know, us Jews, we make out we're like very intellectual and all of that stuff, but actually we're very simple. We're simple creatures. We can do tragedy and we can do comedy really well. You know, give us tragedy, we're amazing at tragedy and we're amazing at comedy, but all of that, like in all the stuff in between, like the introspection and the like the careful like mindfulness and, you know, yoga and all of that shtick, we are rubbish at that. Give us tragedy, give us comedy, and we will you know, keep you laughing and crying kind of thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. That's beautiful. That definitely has a ring to it. I feel you. Yeah, that's totally.
Cool. All right. Well, cue Larry at that point, and then the real Larry. And then 59. You're it tonight. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So you start off with a long question.
Whoa. Okay. Very verbose questioner. That's the kind of questioner I am. Let's imagine this actually is exactly what I would have said. I would have said, okay, I would like to go again and again and again, because that's my thing, into the question of pleasure and pain, desire and fear. I understand fear, which is memory and anticipation of pain. It is essential for the preservation of the organism and its living pattern. Needs, when felt, painful, and their anticipation is full of fear. We are rightly afraid of not being able to meet our basic needs. The relief experienced when a need is met or an anxiety allayed is entirely due to the ending of pain. We may give it positive names like pleasure or joy or happiness, but essentially it is relief from pain or need. I'm a human animal. I have needs, and if those needs are not met, there is pain. It is this fear of pain that also holds together our social, economic, and political institutions. Everything is fused by this fear and our response to that. What puzzles me is that we derive pleasure from things and states of mind which have nothing to do with survival. In fact, I was talking about this with my friend just a half an hour ago. I mean, this is strangely very appropriate. And honestly, unfortunately, I have not read this before. So weirdly appropriate. They damage or destroy the object, the instrument, and also the subject of pleasure. Otherwise, pleasure and pursuit of pleasure would be no problem. So this brings me to the core of my question. Why is pleasure destructive? Why, in spite of its destructiveness, is it wanted? I may add, I do not have in mind the pleasure-pain pattern by which nature compels us to go her way. I'm thinking here of the man-made pleasures, both sensory and subtle, ranging from the grossest, like overeating, to the most refined, like sitting here talking to you. Addiction to pleasure at whatever cost is so universal that there must be something significant at the root of it. There must be. Of course, not every activity of man must be utilitarian, designed to meet a need. Play, for example, is natural, and man is the most playful animal in existence. Play fulfills the need for self-discovery and self-development. But even in his play, man becomes destructive of nature. Even in our play, we destroy nature, we destroy others, and ultimately, quite often, we destroy ourselves.
In short, you do not object to pleasure, but only to its price in pain and sorrow.
Yeah. If reality itself is bliss, then pleasure in some way must be related to it. How can you have bliss and not have pleasure?
Let us not proceed by verbal logic. The bliss of reality does not exclude suffering. The bliss of reality does not exclude suffering. Besides, you know only pleasure, not the bliss of pure being. So let us examine pleasure at its own level. If you look at yourself in your moments of pleasure and pain, you will invariably find that it is not the thing in itself that is pleasing, is not the thing in itself that is pleasant or painful, but the situation of which it is a part. It is not the thing in itself that is pleasant or painful, but the situation of which it is a part. Pleasure lies in the relationship between the enjoyer and the enjoyed, and the essence of it is acceptance. Whatever may be the situation, if it is acceptable, it is pleasant. If it is not acceptable, it is painful. What makes it acceptable is not important. The cause may be physical or psychological or untraceable. Acceptance is the decisive factor. Aversely, suffering is due to non-acceptance.
What makes it acceptable is not important. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Pain, at a very fundamental level, in terms of how we experience it, is not entirely acceptable.
Why not? Did you ever try it? Do try, and you will find in pain a joy which pleasure cannot yield. For the simple reason that acceptance of pain takes you much deeper than pleasure does. The personal self, by its very nature, is constantly pursuing pleasure and avoiding pain. That's the personal self, in its very nature, is constantly pursuing pleasure and avoiding pain. The ending of this pattern is the ending of the small s self. The ending of the real with its desires and fears enables you to return to your natural state.
Sorry, you said
of the small s self with its desires and fears enables you to learn to return to your real state, the source of all happiness and peace. The perennial desire for pleasure is the reflection of the timeless harmony within. It is an observable fact that one becomes self-conscious only when caught in the conflict between pleasure and pain, which demands choice and decision. So when trying to decide between pleasure and get between pleasure and pain, trying to get pleasure, avoid pain, then that's when you become self-conscious because you have to make decisions and stuff. It is this clash between desire and fear that causes anger, which is the great destroyer of sanity in life. When pain is accepted for what it is, a lesson and a warning, and deeply looked into and heeded, the separation between pain and pleasure breaks down. Both become experience, painful when resisted, joyful when accepted.
Huh. All right. This is really, really helping me at the moment, I have to say, because I am feeling hungry. And so I am, but I'm also enjoying talking and doing this, but there are these kind of two, there is pain and pleasure happening at this moment for me. So I don't know, help me more with this. I mean, what you're saying is really great, but do you advise shunning pleasure, right? So at this moment, shunning pleasure would involve me going, no, it's okay. We're going to talk for another hour. I'm going to shun the pleasures of the flesh and pursuing pain, although not pursuing completely pain because we'd be pleasures of the mind, but at some level pursuing pain because I am not sating my hunger, right? That's how I would put it for me.
Mm-hmm. No, nor pursuing pleasure and shunning pain. Accept both as they come.
No. Enjoy. So I shouldn't pursue pleasure and I shouldn't shun pain.
Yep. No pursuing pleasure, no shunning pain, no shunning pleasure, no pursuing pain. Just accept both as they come. Enjoy both while they last. Enjoy both as they last. Let them go as they must.
Okay, maybe we'll come to this, but how can I... Because some decision does potentially could be made at this point in the sense of me choosing after we've spoken, Maharaj, me choosing to leave 5 or 10 minutes after the conversation, the other conversation begins, and go and eat. Or it could involve me choosing in some way to stay with a certain kind of pain for another pleasure. So I don't know, maybe we'll come to this, but.
In the moment, yeah. I don't know if there is necessarily like in the moment, like before you access the mind, you know, when you're just observing the mind in the moment now, I don't know, there's not any, when does the choice take place? Like, is it right now or, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure if there's a...
I think at some level, I would say the choice has almost already taken place in the sense that we're in the middle of reading this, which is amazing. And I am loving it, by the way. But but the choice has already been made that when I said I could make a choice, I kind of knew I already had in the sense that I knew that we would finish reading this and we would maybe dwell a little bit on it. But... our conversation would be kind of negotiated with my hunger and in the sense that my hunger would sort of say, okay, let's talk for 10 minutes, but then I'm going to go and have some food and watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, right?
Yes.
And I kind of knew at some level that, I mean, I didn't rhetorically suggested that because that it came through my kind of social grid, but I already knew that that was the choice and I knew or hoped that you'd be okay with that choice, right? That I knew that it's not like you're not the sort of person who is expecting us to sit and talk for another hour after we finish, right? I know that you're cool with whatever the choice is made. So strangely enough, which again, maybe actually goes with more of a Maharaj spirit, is that there is no choice to be made because the choice is made, right?
Yeah, I think so. And also like there's probably some like, subtle element of like aligning with the choice that's already going to happen anyway. There's something even subtler, like if you just in each moment, there's some sort of like you're you know about all those factors, like we've created this like mental construct of all these things that they were a person, and then this is the future that we've constructed in our mind, and it's it goes along with this feeling in our stomach and this idea of hunger and like what's gonna happen in this idea. But then like in each moment it's like you're presented with like a moment, and then you can like and things seem to, you know, that meaning seems to not, that's like the reality is different than the idea. Like the idea is an idea, and the reality is actually right now. So that's an interesting thing. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's like not, it's just sort of doesn't like have any, there's nothing else than that. It's not like that, there's no conclusion, but you know.
Okay. But that is very cool, and I'm liking this. I'm liking this. Is almost like when someone's playing a track, and we're like, we're kind of like noodling along. It's like we're adding like little riffs, but you are riffing in. You are riffing. I genuinely feel like you're riffing in the essence of Maharaj. This is great. How can I possibly then? Because I am feeling it. This is brilliant, right? I'm genuinely feeling the pangs of hunger. They're very real. I can feel them. I'm thinking about, I can smell that delicious harissa-infused veg that is, you know, I can see it in my mind. I know the veg that is there. I've got some Brussels sprouts. I've got some sweet. Yum. I've got some carrots. I've got some sweet potatoes. I mean, really, it's just like and I've got some tofu as well. I've got like some smoked tofu, just like a whole smorgasbord of things, which I'm going to have with some, you know, couscous or something, right? It's really, really going to be super delicious. So I'm in a certain amount of pain, a certain amount of impatience. How can I possibly enjoy the pain? Physical pain calls for action, goddammit. It calls for me to call a halt to this and go and eat that damn good food.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So yeah, of course, and so does mental pain calls for action, I think. So the bliss is in the awareness of it, in not shrinking or in any way turning away from it. So it's like in this moment that you're a being having that experience, and you're aware of yourself as a being, actually not a mental construct, but an actual being having that experience, that's where the bliss is in the Satchitananda, this being, consciousness, bliss. And all happiness comes from awareness. The more we are conscious, the deeper the joy. Acceptance and pain, non-resistance, courage and endurance, these open deep and perennial sources of real happiness. Acceptance of pain, non-resistance, courage, and endurance, these open deep and perennial sources of real happiness, true bliss.
Okay, but that's all in the future, dude. Because I saw you half an hour ago. Your wife served you some dinner before we started. You have eaten, okay? This is very animalistic now, all right? So of course you could talk like this. You've got a full belly. Why should pain be more effective than pleasure?
Pleasure is readily accepted, just automatically, while all the powers of the self reject pain, of the small s self reject pain. Very so true. That's happening in our ego. As the acceptance of pain is the denial of the ego, small s self, and the self and the small s self stands in the way of true happiness, right? That's what we think when we've probably this far into this book, we probably get that. The wholehearted acceptance of pain releases the springs of happiness.
Okay. Let's say that again, the wholehearted, not just like, okay, I'll do it. The wholehearted acceptance of pain. Like, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, good. Good, you're hungry. Good. Good. Yeah. Feel the hunger. Feel the hunger, man. Yeah. Releases the springs of happiness. Okay, yeah, I'm feeling it a bit. Yeah, okay. Go on. does the acceptance of suffering then act the same way?
The fact
suffering.
Of pain.
Because I'm not suffering. I'm not suffering at all. Right. I'm in pain. I'm feeling the need to eat, but there is zero suffering. I know I will eat, so there's no suffering there. Yeah.
Right. So the fact of pain is easily brought within the focus of awareness. Hunger pangs, feeling, it's a sensation, it's easily, you can feel it in your body. With suffering, it is not that simple. To focus, suffering is not enough, for mental life, as we know it, is one continuous stream of suffering. To reach the deeper layers of suffering, you must go to its roots and uncover their vast underground network, where fear and desire are closely interwoven, and the currents of life's energy oppose, obstruct, and destroy each other. I felt that, but I was like, my roommate was also calling, I had food delivered. I think they were trying to tell me it. But did that communicate?
I heard somebody calling your name, and I thought that was interesting, because again, this is bringing in like the call of reality, the call of food. I mean, actually on your side as well. Oh, so you are also getting some food brought to you.
I am. And it's funny, the cat opened my door. Sometimes the cat can somehow open my door. And then through the open door, my roommates yelled up. But yeah, so I feel hunger pangs too, but I don't mind that hunger pain at all. Like I don't find should I reread that thing or did it come across?
You, let's just remind ourselves, you have also that tattoo on your arm. Maybe I need to get it. Okay, let's keep on going. Okay, but maybe we're not going to, we're not going to rush it, but maybe we're going to really enjoy reading through it. We're not going to extemporize. Mm. We've done a lot of that. We're going to read it through fully and with gusto and then go and eat some food. Okay.
Yes, so totally.
So how can I set right a tangle, right? Which is entirely below the level of my consciousness.
Mm. By being with yourself, the I am. By watching yourself in your daily life with alert interest, with the intention to understand rather than to judge, in full acceptance of whatever may emerge, because it is there. You encourage the deep to come to the surface and enrich your life and consciousness with its captive energies. Mm-hmm. So you encourage the deep to come to the surface and enrich your life and consciousness with its captive energies. Hmm. This is the great work of awareness. It removes obstacles and releases energies by understanding the nature of life and mind. Intelligence is the door to freedom. And alert attention is the mother of intelligence. Alert attention.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, one more question. I know everyone's got questions, but I'm greedy for wisdom. One more question. Why does pleasure end in pain? I mean, if you think about it, I don't know. Why should it?
Huh. Everything has a beginning and an end, and so does pleasure. Don't anticipate and don't regret, and there will be no pain. It is the memory and imagination that cause suffering. The imagination that causes suffering. Imagining.
Don't anticipate, don't regret.
Of course, pain after pleasure may be due to the misuse of the body or the mind, especially the mind, body too sometimes. The body knows its measure, but the mind does not. Doesn't know the body's measure, the body knows though. Its appetites are numberless and limitless. Just keeps wanting stuff. Mind just keeps wanting stuff. Watch your mind with great diligence. Watch your mind with great diligence. For there lies your bondage and also the key to freedom. Great diligence.
Okay, that's great. But sorry to be a pain in the rear end, but I don't feel my question is not yet fully... I don't feel like it's fully answered. You know, I don't know. Maybe this is a dualistic thing, but why are pleasures often seen as destructive? Why do we find so much pleasure in a way in destruction, right? Overdoing it. Life's concern maybe lies in protection, perpetuation, expansion of itself. In this, it is guided by pain and pleasure. At what point, I mean, they do, but at what point do they become destructive?
What point do they become destructive? When the mind takes over, remembers and anticipates. It exaggerates, distorts, it overlooks all kinds of stuff. The past is projected into the future, and the future betrays the expectations. The future is not going to be like you think, probably. The organs of sensation and action are stimulated beyond capacity, and they inevitably break down. The objects of pleasure cannot yield what is expected of them and get worn out or destroyed by misuse. So they can't do it, you know, try to, like the vision thing, and trying too hard and not the natural use of that object of pleasure. It results in excess of pain where pleasure was looked for.
Okay, so, yeah. So we destroy not only ourselves, but others too.
Yeah, naturally, selfishness is always destructive. Desire and fear both are self-centered states, small s, self-centered states, desire and fear. Between desire and fear, anger arises. With anger, hatred. With hatred, passion for destruction. In an extreme, yes. War is hatred in action. Organized and equipped with all the instruments of death.
Is there a way to end these horrors? Horrors.
When more people come to know their real nature, their influence, however subtle, will prevail and the world's emotional atmosphere will sweeten up. People follow their leaders, and when among the leaders appear some great in heart and mind and absolutely free from self-seeking, their impact will be enough to make the crudities and crimes of the present age impossible. A golden age may come and last for some time and succumb to its own perfection. For ebb begins when the tide is at its highest.
Whoa. Whew. You're like, I mean, reading this now, this sounds like a modern Nostradamus, because in a way, I don't know what that is, but what comes to mind as you read it is like, well, maybe if all the, you know, the Messiah is coming, and the Messiah is not that Messiah, the Messiah is like AGI, right? If the Messiah is AGI, if the Messiah ultimately becomes some form of super intelligence that is also super wise and maybe super loving, and suddenly we've created this kind of like God. I mean, this would be the most rosy, optimistic version, right? Unfortunately, but we've created this God like AGI and it's all wise and all knowing. Then maybe, Maharaj, maybe you had this vision of the future when you said that, you know, everything will kind of start to sweeten up because people will follow their leaders, not Donald Trump, not Rishi Sunak, but maybe some truly enlightened AGI leaders, right? And when among the leaders appears, and the leaders will all be working together because it's all just one being, and it'll just become lovely. But until then, is there no such thing as permanent perfection? Or maybe that is going to be the permanent perfection.
Nah. So there is, but it indicate it includes like all imperfections. So maybe we're already in it right now, because it's already, the imperfection is part of the perfection. It is the perfection of our self nature, which makes everything possible, perceivable, and interesting. It knows no suffering, for it neither likes nor dislikes, neither accepts or rejects. Creation and destruction are the two poles between which it weaves its ever-changing pattern. It goes between creation and destruction, the perfection. Be free from predilections and preferences, and the mind with its burden of sorrow will be no more.
Well, it's good to know I don't suffer alone. There are others. And I imagine looking around at everybody who's seated on the floor, looking up at Maharaj, who's seated on the
chair.
On the chair, yeah.
I mean, so for sure. And when you go to them with your desires and fears, you merely add to their sorrows. First, be free of suffering yourself, and then only hope of helping others. Do not even need to hope. Your very existence will be the greatest help a man or woman can give their fellow person.
Wow. And I guess this brings us full loop to what we were talking about before, in the sense of congratulating ourselves or something, right? Because at some level, and this is where the duality becomes non-dual. At some level, this is the highest statement of utter narcissism. If you are pathologically narcissistic,
yeah,
you actually genuinely believe that your stupid human existence is the greatest help a man, and often is a man, but now it's men and women, can give to their fellow men. When in fact, no, maybe you're just another, you know, I don't know, human, unenlightened human creature wandering across the surface of the planet. But at the same time, I guess through that other lens, through the other side, yeah, why would your existence not be the greatest help? Because you don't know even what help means. Maybe you being a total asshole is, in fact, the greatest help a man can give to fellow men. I mean, think of all the help that, I mean, you know, some of the true classic assholes have genuinely given other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Definitely, and for sure. I mean, you know, right?
That's, I mean, not help, not direct help, but indirect help. Like, don't be like me or whatever, right?
Yeah, there's a funny,
I mean, that's what Curb Your Enthusiasm is about at some level.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like sort of, it's like Larry David is going, you know what, I can't help it, I am made this way, but actually, look at the shit this lands me in. Try not to do it. Be a good person, you know, like, shut your mouth.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's not a guide. It's not a guide for everybody. It's like, narcissism is an interesting thing, because I think we have probably benefited tremendously from narcissistic people and on Earth, is my guess. You know, it's like, it's not a pleasant thing to, like, in socially. It's very terrible socially, of course, you know, dealing with a narcissist. It's not good for that at all, but it's not, it's like a funny truth that, like, it's actually, there's a truth about it, because we are, like, in our experience, we're creating a reality, and it's like, so once you break it down to, like, the actual thing happening, like, not in our imaginations, but in reality, it's like, so, you know, so the,
yeah. And a lot of the greatest gurus, not Maharaj, because he hasn't been cancelled yet, but a lot of the greatest gurus unfortunately, we're all pathological narcissists. I mean, Chogyam Trungpa, I love that man. I really, really love him. But I've read the biographies. You know, he was a narcissist, and he abused a lot of people. He took advantage of his power, and I guess you can't really be truly, unfortunately, this would be my, you know, cutoff. You can't be an enlightened person, enlightened being. I don't know, but maybe my enlightenment is very woke, very 21st century. I don't think you can be an enlightened being and sleep your way through your sangha. And kind of be quite imperious and demand certain things of people and I don't know. You tell me.
I think
you
definitely have a different take on that? Yeah.
Do you think
sure,
you can actually be like a total, like sexually a predator, but in a way you also really move people along and they really? Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Muji is that, you know, like he's probably one of the most, he is completely in live, watched thousands of hours. He's an enlightened person for sure. And he has sex with tons of huge controversy, of course. I don't know if anyone knows about it.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Interesting.
And it's like, you know, it's like, yeah. So, but it's like, it's a weird thing. Cause you know, once you have no ego, right? So when you're enlightened, you just
once
don't have
no
an ego.
Ego. Once you've just, you're just basically one big walking dick, then then you are an enlightened being. Because
you're
that's
not anything.
Because you've fully accepted that that's what you are. You're like, okay, well, I seem to always be erect in the presence of these beautiful and sometimes vulnerable and, you know, looking up to me, literally, women. Yeah. So, hey, I'm going to take advantage of that.
It's not ideal. It's a shame.
Wow.
It is a shame.
But I'm not being judgmental. I think it's a genuinely interesting idea. I wish we had an hour to explore it, but I feel like we're going to come back to this one. It's like, watch this space.
Yeah, we definitely should. I don't think like enlightened is the same as good. Like, I think there's incredible, some of the best people in our in world history, probably the best ones are the opposite of enlightened. Elon, for example, is like the least enlightened person ever. He's miserable. He talks about it. No one would want to be him, but he's like, to me, he's like kind of like, he's doing the best stuff on earth right now. And so I don't think that there's like any correlation between spiritual enlightenment.
So you could be like an enlightened, but you could be basically a shithead.
You could be. I don't even think they're correlated. There might even be like almost a reverse correlation because of the narcissism thing. It could almost be a little bit of an aid. And so that would go along with problems. So with other people, I don't think enlightened people should be leading the world or anything. I just think that they're spiritually. So the spiritual thing, like Martin Luther King was just banging all the girls too. You know, like it's like the spiritual thing has nothing to do with the other stuff. They are separate things. They just the human, like I think the way they would explain it, you know, like Maharaj, you know, Nisargadatta or Ramana, is that it's like they are not human, like that they are saying I'm not the person, like they're not the one that's talking is the witnessing consciousness. The person may be predetermined. I don't even know, you know.
Okay. I think that's very, very interesting, but I also think it is ethically problematic in ways that we can potentially develop. But I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
I'm almost looking forward to it as much as I'm looking forward to my perfectly roasted by now, and probably even tastier than they were if I'd eaten them half an hour ago. So thank you. There you go. But I'm looking forward to my perfectly roasted veg. And
amazing.
That was a really good one. I'm going to enjoy also playing us out on this Leonard Cohen.
Perfect.
You want a dark track? I'll send it to you. It's a good one. Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. Awesome.
All right.
Cool. Enjoy. See ya.
Ciao.
You're the cutest thing that I did see. I really love your beaches. Want to shake your tree. I lovey-dovey all the time. Ooh, baby, I sure show you a good time. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I sure don't want to hurt no one.
If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker. We kill the flame. Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified in the human frame. A million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker. Hey, nay, 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 nay. I'm ready, my lord. There's a lover in the story, but the story's still the same. There's a lullaby for suffering and a paradox to blame. But it's written in the scriptures and it's not some idle claim. You want it darker. We kill the flame. Prisoners and the guards had taken aim. I struggled with some demons, they were middle class and tame. I didn't know I had permission to murder and to maim. You want it darker? Healer, I'm